The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90 Red Eye. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. You and I just, I'd asked you about the darkest hour.
Yeah.
Just thinking, knowing that AMC and probably the Turner Classic Movies, TCM, will be showing war movies over the next couple of days.
Right.
And I was just looking at one of the lists that's out there, and The Darkest Hour was on one of the lists. And I asked you, did you see it? And you said yes.
I did. Gary Oldman plays Churchill and does a really great job. I mean, it's unbelievable how great he was in it. And the makeup. I don't know the name of the makeup artist or artists, but it was incredible.
Is that good?
Yeah. You know, often when they do that, they really have to kind of go out of their way, and you can kind of tell it's makeup. Mm-hmm. No, this was
that good.
This was so well done, very realistic. I don't know. I haven't seen Gary Oldman in a couple of years. Maybe he's looking more like Winston Churchill these days, naturally. But it was funny because I remember seeing the preview. My wife was sitting there. She goes, "Who is that?" I said, "Gary Oldman." She says, "They keep saying that, but that can't be Gary Oldman." I said, "No, that's him." But did a really great job. I thought that the movie was well done. You know, it focused on the, you know, the whole thing with the victory sign, you know, that and with mm-hmm. him in that picture. They have a moment about that. That's pretty funny. I thought they did a pretty good job at overall at depicting, you know, what was going on, the sentiment and what Britain was up against at that moment. Specifically who they were up against, of course, and it was Hitler. And this big grand plan that ultimately Churchill came up with and they enacted in order to save, you know, members of their military. And so you look at that, that would have been, oh my gosh, that would have been several years before my grandfather enlisted. And went off and ultimately fought in the Battle of the Bulge. And I always think of that time frame because, you know, it's impossible to know what was going through the mind of any given individual. Even my grandfather, my mom's oldest sister, and when she was living, my grandmother could, you know, share some stories. But the servicemen didn't always share everything. I mean, back then, you didn't necessarily mm-hmm. share it. There's a lot of history that is lost when those people are lost. My grandfather died in a truck accident. He was a truck driver after his military career, and he died behind the wheel of a truck in 1956. So I never met him. And, you know, recovering some of that history, not just because it's important to my family history, but, you know, and to history in general. But I think sometimes when you look at a movie like this, Darkest Hour, or any of them that we might see over this weekend, you know, those stories, the ones that are accurate, are important. You know, you have to understand what that service and it was about and still is about, and ultimately, you know, the mentality, knowing full well that, you know, that you weren't going to come home. I remember, I don't remember, but I know now and have learned since when my dad went over to fight in the Vietnam War, and I was just a child. I was only four. But I only put into perspective recently that my mom, a mother of five, including a young baby, my baby sister, you know, she was going to stay home while my dad went over and fought in a war. And I wasn't aware of it at the time, but have learned it since and really put that in perspective. Not only the pressure, of course, of serving and that knowing that, you know, there's a decent chance you won't come home, but then on the home front, you know, my mom, my dad moved her close to her brother. We were only a few doors down from her brother. She had that support, which was great. I remember that. But she still had to deal during that entire time with the fact that there was a decent chance he wouldn't come home and she would be left as a mother of single mother of five.
Yeah, I you know, you think about it. One other movie I want to see is Dunkirk. I heard the sound especially is just amazing. I was reading one critical review saying the sounds of the beach, you know, are just horrifying but mesmerizing at the same time. So I've got to go. I want to go see that. But you know, you think about the ones the war movies that really touch you, and the old man scene. In Saving Private Ryan, where he's an old man and he's looking at, you know, one of the soldiers had gave up his life so he could have it. And when he turns to his wife and said, you know, and I have a hard time saying this, even thinking it, because it's such an emotional moment. You know, have I been a good man?
Right.
Basically, did I deserve the sacrifice? Did I deserve to live this long for the sacrifice that they made?
Right.
Which is... You know, that goes to, that becomes so deep, because that's even, that, you know, there's patriotism, there's fighting for your country, but there's also that moment, that individual moment of person to person when you realize that someone else sacrificed, you know, their life. And I think before Tom Hanks died, didn't he say, earn this?
Right. Yeah.
I think you said it to him, you know, earn this. And,
earn this.
You know, you and that was such, you know, you'd think about it at the end, that was such an emotional moment. I think of the scene in We Were Soldiers. Mm-hmm. Is that it? We were,
right,
with Mel,
yeah.
With
Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. I almost said Mel Brooks. that's not a good Freudian slip to make. But with the women decide, the wives decide that they're the ones that are going to go and tell the other wives that their husbands are dead and go house to house.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I mean, that just tore me. And I can't imagine fighting in war and then seeing that scene.
Right.
Because to me, that was right to the verge of the limits of emotion for me in a movie.
Right.
That you can possibly, you know, get. I'll never forget, though, when Saving Private Ryan came out, because it was one of the unique perspectives for me for seeing a movie like that, not on television, but I saw that in a movie theater. And it had to be the first week. And the movie ends. And there's complete and total silence in that movie theater. All you hear is people sobbing. I'll never forget. I don't think I'll ever, you know, I think about movies that you see that are just experiences that you can never match. That was one right there, which was after the movie.
Right.
The other one would be the Passion of the Christ, just because it was such a unique movie and such a unique experience, and there was so much, you know, a build up to it and so much spirituality to it, because it was a completely type of unique film. But I'll never forget, then probably it took probably 30 seconds before anybody got up to start walking out of Saving Private Ryan. And I'll never forget, as we're walking out, and I probably let a bunch of people go before me, and as we're walking out, there's a line of people. Complete and total silence, and everybody waiting to get in to see Saving Private Ryan. There must have been, I don't know, 100 people lined up. They were just staring at you walking out, looking like at basically these blank faces, you know, and probably devastated faces walking out of it. It was in movie history extremely, extremely, you know, unique. And I remember walking out thinking, wow, those people are wondering, what did they just go through watching it? Know what it was, basically knowing what it was going to, you sort of knew what it was going to be about when you went in, but you knew you had to experience it. And just to see, what really got me was the silence and just the sobbing that I heard in the movie theater, which was packed. And then everybody walking out and everybody who's coming in just staring at everybody like, what is this going to be like?
Mm-hmm.
Never seen that before.
Yeah.
Probably in movie history, I don't think there's, you know, been anything, you know, like that. I see the movies, you know, movies ranked or whatever. And I don't know how you rank a war movie.
Yeah. You know? I don't know.
I mean, I looked at a couple and the head Apocalypse Now is the number one war movie. Mm. And I'm not
sold on that.
Yeah. Neither was I. I wasn't sold on that either.
Yeah. I mean, I know what they were trying to do and it's likely that it just didn't connect with my generation. I was still young when that movie came out, and didn't have at that time a full understanding of that war, but it just kind of went off into other areas that it was just, if you want to get onto the creative kick and say, well, it was creative or innovative, fine. You know, and it's like you say, how do you rate it? You can say favorite, best of all time. I don't know that there is such a thing. I think it's favorite. And I think it has to do with a lot of people, with me, it has to do again with how well does it, whether it's a true story or not, how well does it depict, you know, that? Because, you know, even as a son and grandson of war veterans, there's no way I can understand, as someone who didn't serve and certainly didn't serve at war. And so how well can Hollywood depict it? You know, you talk about Saving Private Ryan, but those opening scenes, you know, on that beach, they were brutal, but they were brutal for a reason.
Right.
And it's about as close maybe as any civilian might get to experiencing that emotion, which is to convey the lesson from that. And, you know, I mean, you it's funny because I was thinking about the Passion of the Christ, which is a movie that I deliberately went to see alone.
So did I.
It was a, you know, I felt it was something that was, you know, a lesson to be learned, and I was not to be distracted. It really wasn't about a movie. But, you know, I think in many ways you can say that about certain war movies. They're about lessons. I mean, Saving Private Ryan for me was tough to watch because, you know, again, that's probably the closest I would get. And there might be some others out there that are, you know, that are the same way, that depict it in a more realistic fashion. And a brutal fashion, but it's as close as we get as civilians, you know, to experiencing that emotion and learning that lesson from it. It's supposed to be a lesson. I believe it's supposed to be something that, you know, sometimes it is entertainment, but I think most often in something like that, it can serve and should serve as a lesson to demonstrate, you know, what has been done, what the how we got here,
the sacrifices that soldiers make. And, you know, by the way, this gets into the whole, and I think that Megan McCain on The View, mm-hmm, sort of said, you know, and she comes from the point of view of knowing what her father went through,
right?
You know, take the politics out of it, mm-hmm, what John McCain went through, mm-hmm, probably most of us couldn't survive.
Right.
And she came from that point of view to the members of The View. You don't understand how deeply emotional this is. You know, you can sit there as a civilian and sit there and go, oh, hum, means nothing. So what? We didn't mean to insult the soldiers or whatever. You right. can say that as a civilian when you've never gone through it.
Right.
You can marginalize, you know, what's going on. You can try to make, as Whoopi Goldberg did, you know, the what the soldiers went to, and attempt to compare it maybe to what Michael Brown went through.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to succeed at doing it. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, when you look at it, you know, because she was trying to make a moral equivalency of the two,
right,
which
right.
was a ridiculous statement to make.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, when you're a civilian and you haven't gone through it, it's really easy to marginalize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's really easy to dismiss it and say it doesn't matter.
Right.
But you do have hundreds of millions of Americans that are civilians and never went through it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they can't feel what the soldier feels.
But they can understand.
But they can understand.
Or at least have the greatest understanding possible for someone of their experience.
And an appreciation for it. And so they understand how sensitive it is. And so that's one thing that has nothing to do with, because we've talked a lot about the legal case. But this has to do with the moral case and the humanity case of it, of understanding and having respect for people and saying, look, I can still have my protest, but you know something? I choose not to do it here because I do understand the sensitivity of what these people went through.
Right.
And I think not understanding that is also infuriating to a lot of people when there is this conscious effort to just ignore that or marginalize it, when you really are choosing to ignore it because you've never gone through it and you've never confronted it, so you don't know how bad it is or what kind of a sacrifice it is, which makes the emotion of the national anthem that just more important to many people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
In 2017, 41.4% of road check violations were a result of issues related to vehicle brake systems. Not only is it important to keep your brake system in tip-top shape to avoid being placed out of service, it's necessary in order to keep your vehicle running at optimal performance. Here is a tip to keep your brake system in the best shape possible. Drain your air tanks daily. Brake system air tanks, while often overlooked, are a crucial part of proper maintenance. Pay attention to the amount of water and contaminants that escape. Too much moisture in the tanks is not good and can indicate that the air dryer is not functioning properly. The next CBSA International Road Check is June 5th to the 7th, so be sure to get inspected today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90. Red Eye, coming up here in just a little bit, the new poll out suggesting that calling MS-13 members animals is okay with the majority of Americans.
Yeah, okay.
We take polls everything now. Plus an update and a story. Remember Evergreen University? Remember that that college professor at Evergreen University that said, wait a minute, I think I'm going to publicly say that having a thing where white people have to get off campus for a day is the wrong thing to do.
Right.
I remember he was
threatened.
He was threatened. He was surrounded.
Mm-hmm.
He said he couldn't get out. Well, apparently because of what happened there, those riots and those protests, admission rates down 20%. They're laying off professors and everything.
Well,
actions have consequences.
Well, because I mean, do you want your child, or if you're a young person, do you want to attend a school, a campus where there's going to be that kind of disruption? Or do you want to go there and get your classes done?
Well, as we say now with young people and their parents, I'm sure concerned more than ever, and every year that goes by, on the return of investment of a college education, yes.
That's the whole thing, is that they're going to have to make that decision and rethink it and say, well, you know what, maybe they just go to another campus that doesn't have these same problems. By the way, there are fewer of those these days.
No.
scare people. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning, 866-90-RED-EYE. A new poll reveals that the majority of Americans believe it is fair to classify members of the MS-13 gang as animals. Yes, somebody actually took a poll on this. But it's not as big as you might think. 56% of American adults who took part in the Harvard Caps Harris poll agreed with President Trump that calling members of the gang animals is fair, with 44% of Americans who took the poll said the characterization was unfair to the murderous gang members, according to the poll.
Okay. Unfair.
52% of those that took part in the poll added that the comments that dehumanize members of MS-13 are acceptable. You know why the 44% say it's unacceptable?
Because Trump said it?
Because Trump said it. I guarantee you that if Trump hadn't said it, if it was somebody else who said it, it would be 85-15.
Yeah. If Hillary had said it.
If Hillary had said it, there would have been no problem.
Right.
If Obama would have said it,
no problem.
No problem.
Right.
It's because Trump said it. Now, we don't know. I believe the 44% should be polled to be asked the question, is the characterization of MS-13 gang members calling their own animal is unfair?
Yeah, right.
Because that was that story earlier this week, the one MS-13 gang member named by the other gang members and called by the other gang members animal, was going to prison for 40 years.
Now, ask these people if you called a member of the Tea Party an animal. Would they, the ones who said it's unacceptable, can you call a member of the Tea Party an animal? Oh,
well,
yeah,
the
yeah,
best
yeah.
Was
that's
the,
fine.
The best was the CNN contributor Anna Navarro. Reprehensible. Reprehensible. And then they got the tweet from her calling Trump an animal in 2016. Well, yeah, he's Trump. They're just murderous gang members. Of course, Trump is an animal because he's Trump. And he says things, and I don't like his personality. Yeah. He's an animal. The murderous gang members, it's horrible that he would refer to them as gang members.
Yeah.
My God, this is just... I do need to rest for a couple of days from all of this. With everything, with everything going on, with the insanity this week... With the spy is not a spy, but a spy is an informant. Well, what's an informant? Well, an informant is somebody who gathers information secretly from another organization. Well, that's the definition of a spy. Well, no, that's not my definition of a spy. Well, here's the definition in the dictionary. Well, the definition in the dictionary, I don't abide by that definition. Well, what definition do you abide by? I abide by the definition of what I think at the particular moment, and therefore I'm right and you're wrong. So you have no reference point for your opinion. No.
Yeah. So what about murderous gang members? It's funny because, but this is nothing new. You have a murderous dictator in Kim Jong-un. And Trump calls off the summit, and it's Trump's fault he's going to kill us all.
I did see, who wrote that? I saw that same thing.
Well,
I saw that on social media. Somebody put, Trump's going to kill us all.
I think the headline from Vox was something like, we should have known better than to have trusted Trump. I'm sorry, you're missing the important part of that equation, the murderous dictator.
Evergreen State College is eliminating dozens of staff positions as it struggles to cope with plummeting enrollment in the wake of the protest that engulfed the campus last year. This is from campusreform.com. John Carmichael, chief of staff and secretary to Evergreen State College Board of Trustees, announced in a memo to staff and faculty members on Tuesday that the school has already cut 24 faculty lines and eliminated 19 vacant staff positions, and warned that up to 20 additional staff members could be laid off. Over the past several days, 20 staff members have been notified that they are at risk of layoff. Carmichael wrote, these layoffs, although necessary to stabilize the college's budget, represents a profound loss to many. The staffing cuts, which include not renewing contracts for several faculty members, came shortly after the college revealed it would be cutting $5.9 million from the budget in anticipation of a shortfall in applications of up to 20%. Both announcements come nearly a year after the college endured persistent riots following former professor Brett Weinstein's decision to question the day of absence, an initiative that asked white students to leave campus for a day of campus diversity workshops while people of color participated in on-campus workshops. After besieging Weinstein in his classroom, student protesters proceeded to hold the school president, George Bridges, and several other administrators hostage in the president's office, temporarily refusing to even let Bridges use the bathroom unless he agreed to adopt their demands for additional diversity-related initiatives. Carmichael warned employees it is impossible to make a budget cut of such magnitude without affecting some programs and services, noting that the college can't afford things like theatrical productions in the experimental theater. Evergreen State will have to reduce staff support in the library and media department and enrollment and marketing department and custodial positions. In addition, the computing and communications department will no longer be able to perform in-house repairs on some technology. Hmm. So there you go. Same thing happened at the University of Missouri.
Yeah. Why would any, student that was looking for a campus, why would any young person want to move toward the disruption? The overwhelming majority of students don't act in that manner. Regardless of whatever opinion they may have, how radical their opinion may be, they don't act in that manner. But when the universities allow this kind of behavior, we're not talking about the peaceful, non-disruptive demonstrations that have been on American campuses for years. We're talking about the idea that we're going to shout you down. We're going to start acting toward you. If you don't join the group, if you're not part of the movement, then you're part of the problem attitude. That becomes extremely disruptive. So why would a parent want to send their child there? Why would a young person want to go? And then you start, all right, do I go to another campus? Or do I look at another type of education altogether?
Well, it comes down to, as we've always said, it comes down to the dollar. It comes down to the fact that I'm going to spend my money I don't wish to spend my money there. Mm-hmm. Why? Because of the disruption that will be caused. I can't trust that this school will keep the protesters under control. That these protesters that are committing what I viewed as illegal acts, and when you allow the left to take over to come up with insane propositions of where your college should go, when people have to pay their hard-earned money to get a college education, and now more than ever they're looking for a return of investment, bye-bye. The NFL is a completely different apples and oranges, but there's one thing. It's still in the marketplace and the marketplace of people wanting to spend their money. The NFL is in business to spend money, or excuse me, to make money and spend some of it too. But they're in business to make money, just like Starbucks, and the left doesn't want you to succeed. I bet you the left looks at this at Evergreen State and thinks, okay, we accomplished something good here. If Starbucks loses profits because of all this, they'll be happy about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure, yeah.
If the NFL hurts because of it, they'll be happy about it.
Yep.
They won't care about the players who won't have the same opportunity to make the same money that they're making right now in a very, very dangerous sport where you do give up part of your health in order to make lots of money. Let's be blunt and honest about it. It's a contact sport.
Yep.
People get hit. You get hit hard. The human body was not made to take those hits that you take in hockey. Really, in any sport, when you think of any sport out there and what you have to train to do it, the human body's not designed to do that.
Right.
And so you are going to suffer. And I mean, in any, you look at any of these things. I have a sister who still hurts tremendously. You know, she went really far and danced with professional, you know, ballets. Mm-hmm. And what they had to do, she still suffers from that today. My sister was an elite gymnast. Her back, you know, starting in her 40s, she had major back problems she has always had. You get involved in...
And they don't even tackle in gymnastics.
Exactly. You get in these elite sports, and especially the contact sports, and that's one of the reasons you make that great money. And so you are very limited as to the amount of time, especially in the NFL, where I still believe the average length of a career is 4 years. Mm-hmm. So remember, you take those players that have been in there 20 years, or every player that's been in, not 20 years, okay, 15 years. You've had a player that doesn't, you know, makes it 6 months or a year or just 2 or 3 years in the business, and they want to make be able to make as much money as possible. And what these protests are doing to the NFL, what? Hurting their bottom line for people that come in the future. Why? Because the social justice warriors don't care about the success of the NFL. They don't care about the success and livelihood of the players. They just wish to disrupt.
Disruption is the name of the game, and if they achieve that, then they've won, they believe.
Right. And don't tell me it's about police brutality, because nobody then Michael Bennett would have been marginalized by that the same organization that's protesting.
Right.
Because Michael Bennett lied about cops.
And he stole the credibility of anybody who had a legitimate case.
Right. And there was no pushback from anybody in the NFL.
No.
So this isn't about police brutality. It's not about racism. Otherwise, he would have been marginalized immediately and ostracized as hurting the movement, and he never was. Yep. And last year, the resurgence in September and October came before Trump even said anything, came because of Michael Bennett. And he was never marginalized, never ostracized by those same people. It was just ignored. If you truly, 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 if you want the truth, if you truly want people to abide by the law, if you truly want fairness, then you have to demand the truth from both sides. And if you just ignore it, sorry, your credibility is shot. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. A man opened fire yesterday in an Oklahoma restaurant, leaving at least 4 people injured before he was fatally shot by a bystander.
Mm.
The gunfire unfolded about 6:30 p.m. last night at Louis on the Lake in Oklahoma City. An unidentified shooter entered the restaurant and fired his gun, Oklahoma City Police tweeted, and later added that four people were injured. Apparently a man.
Yeah.
You know, I'm assuming it was a man.
In fact, both the shooter and the civilian had handguns. And apparently the civilian went after him, followed him outside.
And that's where he shot him.
And the shooter, the bad guy, died. So, again, you know, you have a situation where somebody, you know, with a gun in this case, ran toward the danger. You know, it doesn't happen in every case, but a clear demonstration, I think, again, in support of your right. Whatever your choice is going to be up to you, either in that moment or not in that moment as a gun owner, but your Second Amendment right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. In the news today, multiple news reports out there that Harvey Weinstein will be arrested on rape charges today. CNN confirmed that Weinstein is expected to turn himself into the New York Police Department this morning. He is expected to face charges that he raped one woman and forced another to perform oral sex on him, a source familiar with the investigation told CNN. The first degree and third degree rape charges are from one case, and the first degree sex act charge is from a second case, according to the source. They say Weinstein is estimated to arrive at the precinct at 7 a.m. This morning. Deadline's Dominic Patton said Weinstein, quote, will almost certainly be doing a perp walk, end of quote. Other news relating to that, Oscar-winning actor Morgan Freeman apologized on Thursday to anyone who may have felt uncomfortable or disrespected by his behavior after CNN reported that multiple women have accused him of sexual harassment and inappropriate behavior on movie sets and in other professional settings. This here from PBS. Morgan Freeman said, anybody who has known me or worked with me knows that I'm not someone who would intentionally offend or knowingly make anyone feel uneasy. He said in a statement sent to Associated Press, I apologize to anyone who felt uncomfortable or disrespected. That was never my intent. The CNN report includes the account of a production assistant on the 2017 heist film Going in Style, who detailed an incident in which the actor repeatedly tried to lift her skirt and asked if she was wearing underwear. She alleged Freeman subjected her to unwanted touching and comments on a nearly daily basis on the film. Several women alleged that he made frequent comments about their bodies or he would stare at them in ways that made them feel uncomfortable. CNN spoke to 16 people about Freeman. 8 said that they had experienced harassment or inappropriate behavior, and 8 said that they had witnessed such conduct. 7 of them described harassment or inappropriate behavior at Revelations Entertainment, a company he co-founded. The CNN report also cited accounts by 3 entertainment reporters of inappropriate remarks they allege Freeman made at press junkets, including the report's co-author. And Eric, you were telling me that earlier when we first came in and we were in our pre-show meeting about that.
This is how all this began. It all began with a CNN entertainment reporter, and she sits down with the stars of that movie, being Morgan Freeman, Alan Arkin, and Michael Caine. And they're all seated together across from her. And she was pregnant at the time. Michael Caine in the video, she has it on video because it's a press junket. They record everything. And so, and by the way, this wasn't the only strange behavior by Morgan Freeman at a press junket. They showed CNN did another clip of another reporter, entertainment reporter, at a different press junket, and he was making inappropriate comments. And he, but in this one, where this all began with this CNN reporter, the behavior didn't, the alleged behavior didn't begin there. The investigation did. So that reporter is sitting there. And she's, I think she said, 6 months pregnant at the time. And he's, and you can see it in the video. And he's just looking at her up and down. And then he makes this inappropriate comment at the end. And it kind of caught his co-stars off guard. She, at that point, thought that that reporter said to herself, I need to go talk to and interview other women that have worked with him and see if this has happened before. And this is how all this happened. This is how all this came out. And it's just weird when you see it. At first, and when he's sitting there with the other reporter at the other press junket, at first it's like, okay, you've crossed a line, still in the inappropriate slash flirtation, and then he just kind of goes off the rails. And it's just, I don't know, it's just bizarre. First of all, it's a press junket.
You know the cameras are on.
You know the cameras are rolling. Because that's basically how it goes. You've got one or two main cameras, one focused on the seat of the reporters, and they mm-hmm. rotate right. through that chair. And then you have one on the stars of the movie. And so they just basically keep rolling the whole time. And you bring in a new reporter. They sit down. They start asking their questions. And then you get your cut for your whatever show you're on. And you would think that he would know. I just don't know why he wouldn't care or think, I guess, that that was okay to do. You know, based on his statement, it sounds like he thought it was okay to do. I mean, then you get to the allegations of him trying to lift a skirt. Are you kidding me? I mean, who would think that that's okay?
We've spent a lot of time talking about this, about the culture inside the entertainment, you know, industry. And, mm-hmm. you know, there have been people in our business that have been, you know, accused of doing the same thing. And mm-hmm. this is now, you know, this is my 29th year in talk radio, and roughly, I think this is my 36th year overall. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, I mean, it's, you know, you and you know, working with you as long as that I have, and just being in the same buildings as you, it's something that at least around me, and the people that I work closely with would just never be permitted.
No.
Someone would have spoken up and said, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. It would appear odd to everyone in the room.
Yeah, it would appear odd.
Based on my experience.
Based on my experience.
And that one lady that was on the set, the one female co-worker that was on the set of that movie, Going in Style, said that Alan Arkin actually told him, you got to stop it. What are you doing? And then at that point, he just kind of almost like he snapped out, he being Morgan Freeman kind of
right.
snapped out of it. And so at that press junket with that CNN reporter, not every version of that clip shows it. But after he says those inappropriate comments at the end, both Michael Caine and Alan Arkin kind of give him an odd look. And so, because it's not acceptable, it's not okay, and I don't know where that, you know, because that was the, who said it about the, was it Weinstein himself that said it, you know, back in the day it was okay to act this way or whatever, we come from a different era, you know, and people have tried to excuse that away. No. It's never been acceptable from my experience, and I don't know in what setting it is. I really don't.
You think about the culture, because we've talked about this, the culture of where we work in, and at least the people that I've worked with, just wouldn't allow that to happen. Somebody would speak up at that moment and say, stop it, like an Alan Arkin did. Mm-hmm. But you see how much of this went on in Hollywood and how much of it was known. And did it actually become an acceptable part of the work culture, where those in power, or those that were perceived to have power or major actors, were allowed to get away with it? Now, we talk about Weinstein, and we talk about the fact that, yes, it was part of the culture because they put it in his contract.
Yeah. Well, his company put it in his contract.
Since we know you're going to sexually harass women, here's the deal. The first deal, you need to pay the first woman you sexually harass in some way. You have to take care of all legal costs, and you're going to be fined a certain amount.
Yeah,
I mean, it was bizarre.
It's like a price list, some kind of vulgar price list.
Yeah. And so we know at that point, at that level, that was part of the culture. Otherwise, if it's not part of the culture, you don't write a contract like that.
Exactly. You know, and that's, and then I don't know. I it's just bizarre behavior when you know a camera's rolling. Look, the allegations that weren't on camera about Morgan Freeman or anyone else, can't speak to the nature of those, but when you see the things that did happen on camera, the comments that were made, it's like, I'm sorry, where did you think that was okay? I don't know. It's just odd.
And we, you know, in our business, remember when Mark Halperin was, you know, basically suspended by MSNBC and then gone over mm-hmm. sexual harassment, and we used mm-hmm. to work, I mean, I actually used to work with him, not on a consistent basis, but, you know, with interviews and at different places where, when I worked for ABC Radio, we dealt with each other. I never saw any of that, and I can't imagine with the people that were around him mm-hmm. that I saw.
Right.
You know, when we were out, you know, that they would have allowed, or that it would ever been permissible, and I didn't see it in him. I will tell you that I didn't.
One of the first key accusers of Weinstein that kind of broke the case open spoke at an awards ceremony the other night. And she called out, and it was a very awkward and probably sobering moment for many in the audience. You know, it was the Hollywood elite. And she first called out Harvey Weinstein. And then she went on to say, and I'm paraphrasing, it wasn't okay then, it's not okay now, it will never be okay. And I do know that even people who are here tonight, some of you are here tonight, have participated in this way. It's, we found Harvey Weinstein, we told on him, it's only a matter of time before the world finds out about your behavior. Awkward, but now you think of, and that was just a few nights ago. And then yesterday, the news breaking about Morgan Freeman. You know, I came up with this phrase, gratuitous Morgan Freeman. If you got a really crappy movie, you would go out, just hire Morgan Freeman. Instant credibility. That's what you would do. If it's a really bad movie, just put Morgan Freeman in it, you'll get some box office. And Hollywood was doing that for a long time. And I called it gratuitous Morgan Freeman. If you think it's going badly, then just hire Morgan Freeman. It'll make it better. So it's almost like the Bill Cosby thing. Well, Bill Cosby was America's dad from the 80s. I mean, that's what it was. I mean, we go back. That was the 80s generation of Ozzie and Harriet. You know, the Cosby family. And, you know, the kids say the darndest things and Jell-O pudding and all of the very innocent things. And then all of a sudden you start hearing these stories and you think, wow. But it goes back to something you and I have talked about. the list comes out, you know, who's the most trustworthy person? And often it's somebody from Hollywood.
Yeah.
They're well, actors. Sorry, unless you're a family member
you
or
know.
Intimately familiar with this person, you don't know anything because they lie for a living.
Well,
they portray other people.
That's how bad trust is in our society when the people we trust the most are people who aren't themselves.
Right. Right. I mean, I'm going to put my parents on that list. That's who I
yeah,
know.
Exactly.
That's
right.
That's who I can judge. That's who I can promote and say those are trustworthy people. I mean, there's a handful in our life,
right? List, that's what the list should read every year.
Exactly.
The most trusted people in America.
Mom and dad. Exactly.
Well, except for Michael Rotundo.
He
the 30-year-old that won't get out of the house.
He would be the one who voted against him.
Yes, he'd vote against his parents.
Yes. Exactly.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Yes, you're pulling that grill out for the first official weekend of the summer, and you think to yourself, yo, I want a double cheeseburger, extra, extra salt.
Burger, 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 burger.
Yes, burger, burger, burger. And if you're planning on grilling up a burger or two this weekend, at first glance on average, it looks like
that cheeseburger on the grill will cost more than it did this time last year.
Maybe. Agriculture Department analyst Anne-Marie Coons, she says prices for the buns, lettuce, and tomatoes are below a year ago. It's the cheese and ground beef that earlier this month were running about 5% more, making the average cheeseburger cost $1.69.
Last year it cost $1.67, so an increase of 2 cents.
To put my 2 cents in, we could still end up with a cheaper burger just lately. Wholesale prices of beef and cheese have come down, and Anne-Marie, you say, of course, also.
We have Memorial Day weekend coming up, and we can expect retailers to offer specials on a lot of grilling meats and other supplies that we might have for our barbecues.
And those burgers.
Yeah, burger. Yep. I'm out of here.
So am I. That wraps this up. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, when is a spy a spy? Is an informant who secretly is put into a campaign to get information a spy or just an information gatherer? We'll get to that coming up
secret
here.
Information gatherer.
A secret information gatherer. A temporary displaced.
Temporarily displaced agent.
you see the tweeting because of Elon Musk and the union?
Yeah.
You know, the union's wanting to get into Tesla. And the number of tweets that he put out the other day, the unions are going crazy.
Yeah.
At him. And he basically, you know, they say he broke the law because he threatened to punish them by taking away their stock options if they unionize.
Uh-huh.
And they said, well, that's not really punishing. That's more, you know, that's not really a punishment.
Right.
I'm not firing you. I'm just taking away something that, you know, you would not get if you unionized. But they're going back and forth. But you made a great point here, Eric.
Well,
you made a great point that really that he should be for the unions.
He should support the unions. They support the Democrats who support giving money to losing companies like his. What does he think? Come on. Get Elon on the phone. Get Elon on the phone. We got to have this talk.
We have to straighten his liberal head
out.
Come
on, man.
Wait a minute.
Let's go. What are you doing here? You're fighting against the cause. You need more of that money.
And then
they can help you get that money that you desperately need.
And then him and his new girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
you see that, but you know he's never prevented them. She, you know, they've only been dating 3 weeks,
yeah.
And she's being, you know, hit upon the whole thing, and he's never prevented them from unionizing. It's quite literally fake news. Trust me, I've investigated this heavily, visited his factories.
That's his girlfriend.
That's his girlfriend. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So,
they've been dating 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
And
yes.
She's already making statements on unions?
She ended up deleting the tweet, but still.
Okay. For Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
An active storm in the Gulf of Mexico is going to produce some heavy showers for Florida. Most likely as we get into Sunday, we'll see the center of this system over central Florida and then make its way up the East Coast for the remainder of the weekend. And that's the three-day weekend, including Memorial Day. By Tuesday, we'll see the system most likely off the coast of New York. So for the next few days, expect showers in the south, with Florida expecting heavy showers and most of the East Coast under the threat of rain chances. The best of the three-day weekend for East Coast beaches would be Saturday, and the best bet would be from North Carolina through New England for clear skies. The Midwest and Northeast are clear today. You'll need the sunglasses if you're traveling I-10 from L.A. through most of Texas. The nation's interior is clear on the West Coast. Heavy rain for Northern California and Central Oregon wraps up today. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The bonus show.
That's a little bit of deep voice guy remix.
In other news,
Brian dropped a donut on the button.
In other news, various NFL players are reportedly discussing different forms of protesting in response to a new policy requiring players to stand for the national anthem. I talked to former NFL players yesterday who said that some of the players are already talking about other ways in which they could protest. NBC's Craig Melvin said on Today, this from TheHill.com. Other journalists, including NFL Media Report, said that they also are hearing that some players are considering other forms of protest, including staying in the locker room for the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since that's allowed in the policy, you're not really doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
We're considering other forms of protest. We may stay in the locker room.
Okay.
That's included in the policy.
Yeah, that's accounted for already.
And
that's not your move. That's the NFL's move.
the other point to Steve Kerr from the Golden State coach, who came out and just said it's, you know, basically reprehensible what the NFL is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, wake up. The NBA has a more oppressive rule than the NFL. Apparently, Steve does not even understand what's going on in his own world for the criticism that he laid on the NFL. At least understand the world that you live in before you start judging other people's world, especially from the liberal perspective, because, Steve, remember that the liberal victim of today becomes the oppressor tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because that was already brought up, and we brought the USA Today. Wait a minute, Steve, you're talking about you're really criticizing the NFL. Even the USA Today picked it up, and they said, well, and they agreed with him. It's terrible what the NFL's doing. But, Steve, look at your own league that has a more oppressive rule than the NFL.
Yep.
I just love it. I love it.
That's like somebody in hockey saying, that football is too violent with those men hitting each other.
Especially in an enforcer, even though you don't see as much fighting.
You don't see much of that anymore.
You really don't see as much of. No. Now, I don't know. I finally did watch a little bit of hockey. Remember, I told you just a week ago I had not seen
really
1 second of any hockey the entire year, not 1 second.
Mm.
And
did you watch Mighty Ducks 2?
No, I.
The most hockey you've seen in a year.
Yeah, because I pick up some pointers, or like the flying V.
Yeah.
Remember when they had the flying V or whatever it was supposed to be, like
Ducks
in the
ducks.
Right. And
yeah,
that really made that really gave legitimacy to that movie. Oh, so you skate in a V like the ducks do.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Yes. I didn't see anybody try that after that movie was there. No, I actually watched one of the about 10 minutes of the Vegas team, the Golden Knights.
Okay.
That are an expansion team.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't exist last year.
Right.
They didn't transfer from another city.
Right.
They started as a brand new team, which means they got the bottom of the pickings. They will now be playing for the National Hockey League Championship.
Good story.
The championship. Yeah, I don't believe it's ever. I don't. It might have happened. I got to check because it might have happened back when there really wasn't an organized NHL.
Let me ask you. Do you believe in miracles?
Yes.
No, I love those. I love those types of stories. You know,
it's a great story. I'm trying to think. If they get it.
It
might have happened when some of my ancestors were involved in the NHL. When the McNamara's, one of the McNamara's, before the NHL existed, there was still a Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was 1916, one of the McNamara's, I forgot which one it was, which is like a distant cousin of mine, won the, and I didn't know it, they did the family tree.
Right.
And my nephew said, hey, we got McNamara's in the National Hockey League Hall of Fame.
Go,
really?
You know, the 2 years later, it was the only year they canceled the Stanley Cup playoffs? The flu epidemic.
Oh, okay.
1918.
Right. Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was 1916 before the NHL actually started, that there was another league that had the Stanley Cup was played for, and my ancestor was in that. In fact, I found his hockey card.
Wow.
Or a replication of his hockey card online.
Wow.
And I gave it to my father a couple of years
nice.
Ago. I can't remember what Edward or something. Harold, I think it was.
Okay.
Harold McNamara.
Yeah.
So. But, all right, our audio cut of the day. You ready?
What do you got?
Well, because yesterday, I was busy because I'm catching a plane. This is like my one vacation of the year, and it's for 2 days.
Right.
And this may be the third year in a row I've gone? No, I didn't. I went last year, and I'm going this year. Before, I used to go on Labor Day, but I visit a good friend of mine, and we just him and his wife, we get together. They live in Tampa, so I'm there for a whole rainy weekend. And a tropical depression might be moving through on Sunday, but it's only a depression, so that's not really a concern. Depression's what 30 mile an hour winds,
yeah,
maybe. But they're not even talking about winds; they're talking about rain. So I was busy yesterday because whenever I have to leave for a couple of days, there's like so much work you have to do the day before. It's sometimes not even worth going away. So I didn't pay attention to the news for a while. When I came back, I'm like, well, wait a minute. So they had the meeting? Did the meeting? They said there was no spy. Oh, no, there's no evidence of no spy was presented.
Mm.
Well, but we already know there was a spy. We know there's a spy. Right? We know his name.
Yeah.
Stefan Halper.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Nobody's denying he exists. What's going on here? Why are the Democrats? Why did Comey come out and say there's no evidence of a spy, but Clapper saying that, well, someone was in there, an informant was in there. We wouldn't classify him as a spy. It all comes down to the definition. This is the mind gymnastics, or excuse me, the word gymnastics that the left is playing now. Trump's lying. It wasn't a spy. What was it? It was an informant, maybe being paid by the FBI, secretly gathering information from the Trump campaign. Oh, then it was a spy. No, it's not a spy. Well, wait a minute. Here's a definition of a spy right here. And the definition of a spy fits anyone who is secretly gathering information from an enemy or a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody who is monitoring somebody secretly. That's the actual definition. I don't care what the definition is. Definitions mean nothing to me. I'm a liberal. It was an informant gathering information, or what was the title you came up with?
Temporarily displaced agent.
Yes, temporary displaced agent. And so this is what's going on. And so Tucker Carlson was talking with Molly Hemingway from the Federalist.com. Judicial Watch. I just got mind blank here for a moment here. Oh, I just forgot his name. But he was also on this panel. But here is the audio cut with them talking about what a day it was, where media outlets and others are stating there was no spy. Well, what does this all mean?
And I hate to start on a media question, but it determines how people understand a story, what they read and what they see on television. There are still news outlets as of tonight that are pretending like there was no spying on the Trump campaign. So can you just say definitively, do we know as a factual matter that the Obama FBI spied on the Trump campaign, or don't we?
Well, everyone knows that there was a spy, and in fact, people who were involved in the spying are admitting that there is a spy. They're saying, though, that because the government term is human intelligence informant or something like that, that therefore it's not a spy. Whereas normal Americans understand that when you are gathering information on someone surreptitiously, that's the common definition of spying. And more than that, that's just a stunning revelation that this was happening under the previous administration, that there would be this kind of surveillance, not just at least one human intelligence informant, but also wiretaps, national security letters, which are how you can secretly get a subpoena. And who knows what else is going on? So actually, like, widespread spying involving multiple people in the Trump campaign, and we still don't really know what's going on because they're trying to fight.
And that's the point. And by the way, I should point out in the interest of honesty that these are agencies controlled by the Trump White House. So it's not clear to me at all why we don't know this, and that why the committees in the Congress who have oversight over all of this don't know. There was a meeting today, famously, about this, Tom. Do you think members of Congress, again, charged with oversight of this stuff, know the answer as of tonight?
No, my understanding is they're still being strung along. This meeting was for show. We want to see the documents.
But why would they be strung along?
Because these agencies have contempt for congressional oversight. You have this extraordinary situation of a Republican-controlled Justice Department and FBI attacking and undermining the congressional oversight activities of a Republican-controlled House and Senate. And they didn't want to turn over the documents, so they said, we'll have a meeting and we'll talk about the secret spy game we had, but it won't be public. We won't tell you what we have in terms of turning over documents, which is still the big fight. You know, Judicial Watch specializes in a Freedom of Information Act because we recognize the government documents really tell you what went on, and government official descriptions of what went on, as we're learning from the Obama gang that's describing this spy as an informant in a dishonest way. We need to see the documents. We need to know how much money was this person paid. Was money transferred as a result of his involvement with the Trump campaign? Who else was he working with? Were there others?
But there's a time limit. There's a timer. Sand is passing through the hourglass here. If Democrats take the House and take majority control of these committees, then how will we find out? They have no interest in getting this information to the public.
And this is why it would be nice if everyone on both sides of the aisle had a common understanding that spying on political opponents is not a good precedent, and it's not good for having Americans having confidence in the FBI.
Have you seen any liberals say that?
I mean, there have been a few, I think very exceedingly few. Mark Penn is someone who was a Clinton advisor who has been making that argument. In addition to the issue that the Department of Justice thinks that they are accountable to no one, not the president under whose branch they serve, or Congress, which funds them and created them, I think it also must mean that the information is really damaging.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that's Molly Hemingway from the Federalist.com and Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch. And Judicial Watch probably has been the one private organization that has been done more to get information from the government on the Hillary emails.
Yep.
And they are constantly in a fight with government, because remember, it's government that came up with the Freedom of Information Act.
Mm-hmm.
Government came up with it.
Yep.
And then government fights it all the time. But this is where we are, and when you saw it yesterday, Trump is lying. There was no spy. There was no spy. What was it? And then what was Stefan Halper? What was he doing? So he wasn't in. Well, no, we're not saying that. What we're saying is he wasn't a spy. He was in there secretly gathering information from the campaign. So that's a definition of a spy. By the dictionary. Well, we don't go by the definition of the dictionary. We have our own dictionary, which is what? What we view something as day to day. Well, then we really can't have a discussion, can we?
Well,
that's how bizarre it was
yesterday.
Because
what they're implying is it was some legitimate cause and need for him to be there. Then tell us what that is.
Still a spy.
Exactly.
Whether you believe it's legit, because all of our spies are legit, right?
Even more so. Tell us why he was there.
And who sent them there?
This is the mental gymnastics game, the word gymnastics game that the left was playing and the Democrats were playing yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it's really unbelievable that the media, that, you know, think about it, the media, that here you have the surveillance of a campaign by the opposing administration, and the media doesn't seem to be concerned about it. Some, a few do, but the majority of the media doesn't care because it fits their day-to-day political narrative.
Right.
That's how bad and in bed the media has gotten with politicians
and still
and
nobody
with the political party.
And still they fight giving the information, pointing to where this all began. Why are they fighting that? If it was legitimate, then show the Oversight Committee. Show the American people.
866-90-RED-EYE.
The Detroit powertrain offers efficiency through innovation. Detroit's Brad Williamson has all the details.
A lot of the people in the industry have been doing downspeeding for a while. This is really our first entry into that arena, if you will. So we've combined a DD15 mm-hmm. with a DT12 automated transmission and a 6x2 axle. And you can also get a 6x4, but really it's a complete powertrain. All three pieces, including the front axle, obviously all four pieces, are from Detroit. And it also has something in the transmission called intelligent powertrain management. It's a better step towards predictive technology. So it looks a mile in front of you when you're driving. It knows the territory and the terrain you're going to come up on, and it manages the engine and the transmission the most optimally as that it can when you're in cruise control.
For more on the Detroit powertrain, log on to demanddetroit.com. For Shell Rotella, that's the engine report.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Eric, have a great long Memorial Day weekend.
Have a safe trip.
Everybody be safe.
Yeah,
safe trip. Hope you get to see family and friends, and remember those who have made the ultimate sacrifice so we can do what we do every day, and that's be free.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.